We're the station that focuses on things on your mind. WGNS. And this is Rutherford Issues.
All right, we are back on Rutherford Issues. Joining us today is Miss Deborah Johnson, Program Director with the local domestic violence shelter. Hello, Deborah.
Good afternoon.
How are you doing today?
Doing good. Waiting for the cooler weather to come in next week.
I think that's what everyone's hoping for. Is the cooler weather supposed to come in
next
week?
That's what the news said.
Because of good old Hurricane Irene?
Maybe.
Maybe it's just, yeah, it's all a matter of perspective. When the wind's blowing that fast, it all feels cool, right? Well, it's good to be here in the middle of Tennessee, where we're mostly going to get out of that one unscathed. Now, I was talking to you off the air right before we came on about where the domestic violence shelter is located.
Well, I can't tell you. I can't tell you about the shelter.
Well, about the office.
We do have a walk-in public office, and it's at almost the corner of Memorial and Medical Center.
And you had kind of a funny story about that. Oh.
We give a landmark when people are looking for our agency. We do not have our name on the marquee that's on the side of the building. It's the 826 building, and a lot of the businesses that are in that building are listed, but we deliberately are not. So we use the Nissan dealership next door as our landmark, and which always works pretty well. Most people know where it is or can certainly spot it. But I did have a family head toward Smyrna thinking that I was referring to the Nissan plant. So we have to be careful to be sure that we refer folks here to Murfreesboro, to Nissan, to us.
That's right. Now, the website for you guys is dvpshelter.org.
Correct.
It's a great website. I was just browsing through there earlier, and I was really surprised to see how much stuff you guys cover that I think, you know, it's domestic violence. You hear domestic violence. And I think people have this very, not narrow idea of what it is, but maybe aren't aware of what all exactly that encompasses and just how many victims of domestic violence there are out there every day.
Right. You're really very correct. We did a presentation not too long ago, and we were going over some of our statistics. I mean, last year here in Rutherford County, we served 1,400 people.
Wow.
About 500 of the 14 were minor children. We had about 100 families come to our safe shelter, and they had about 100 kids that stayed with us also.
Wow.
And then we had, like, you know, 1,000 people come into the walk-in office there on Memorial, working on court orders, restraining orders, counseling, and things like that. And those families also requested services for another 400 children. So there's a lot of kids, you know, really being affected by this issue in their homes all through our community. And when I had said that to the group I was speaking to, they thanked me for coming from Nashville to explain some of the problems that we were having to them. And so I had to say, no, this is, you know, Murfreesboro, Rutherford County that we're talking about, not Davidson County, not big metro or anything, but locally. And we also, services that people may not be aware of, is we are now a domestic violence and sexual assault program, which means we go to the hospital, and if there's a rape case in our community, we respond to that just like law enforcement does, and stay with the victim, provide advocacy, clean clothes, toiletries, try to answer questions and things like that. And that's a new service just a few years ago.
And advocacy is such a big part of that, and that's something you see so many more outreach programs adopting now that kind of didn't happen before. You see a lot more people adding that component to their programs because, you know, the legal process, the process of going through all that with, you know, the hospitals or lawyers, many other things, it's not something that everyone understands, that everyone is well-equipped for, and not something you really want to have to worry about or think about if you're going through an experience as traumatic as abuse or rape or anything like that.
Yeah, I think people can identify, you know, maybe not with those particular subjects, but if you've just gone to the hospital, say our new brand new hospital out here, and haven't been out there yet, and you need to go visit somebody who's ill, where do you park, and where's the front door, and, you know, where's the elevator? It's not like the old hospital was. Having somebody walk with you and explain the process for anything is so comforting, and I think that is a service that a lot of agencies are, and with volunteers to provide that advocacy, we can really reach a lot of folks.
And you mentioned the volunteers. You guys have right. kind of a new volunteer thing going on now, a new program, a new way that you handle mm-hmm. volunteers. Is that right?
Right. Chris has got a brand new volunteer plan worked out for the program. We've always used volunteers, and most of our funding, our grants, require that we work volunteers into our program. But we have it sort of divided up now, where we have one group of volunteers that can come just from the community, maybe from a church group, a scouting group, people that would like to help us, maybe a factory work day, and we don't do background checks. We do get a confidentiality signed form because right. they may be working at the shelter, which is confidential, but they'll come out and provide a service, maybe do yard work or painting or clean the fence or something like that, and those folks are great. But for folks that have a little bit more time to give, maybe want to get a little bit more involved in how the agency actually functions, we have another set of volunteers. They do fill out a volunteer application, which is available at our website. They do have to do a background check because they'll be in the building. They may be speaking with and working with clients, and we just have to know who these folks are. Background checks are, I don't think there's probably any agency really that uses volunteers much that doesn't do that now. And those people could answer the phones, help us with filing, work in our database, help us enter things in the database, definitely work with donations, sorting and putting up donations, and sometimes going with clients to court and hand-holding, sitting, and just sort of being there, provide transportation or play with children, things like that. And then our third level up is to actually become a real knowledgeable, educated, do some training with us in addition to the above, and really work with clients. I mean, really be a part of the agency and know what we're doing, and be there to back the staff up and be sure that the work's being done, answer the crisis line, some real important jobs like that. And then some people actually become volunteers, where they're pretty much, we would consider them unpaid staff.
Right.
Our university interns, we work with MTSU and the other colleges and universities, and they're given clients and client responsibility, and of course shadowed by staff and giving specific training on those issues. So any level somebody might like to come in and work with us, we would love to see them.
Absolutely. Let me ask you this. How many of your volunteers, if you had to guess, or maybe you know, mm-hmm. how many of the volunteers, how many people that are interested in helping out may have been victims themselves before? It's one of those issues that there's such a sense of support, and you know, when you get through it and needing to help out people who are having that same problem now, do you think a good percentage of your volunteers are in that boat?
I think a lot of the volunteers have been, and maybe not directly. I think a lot of times it's a family member, that a parent, maybe mom or sister or best friend went through that situation. We've got a girl that's on our crisis line right now for sexual assault, and her best friend was a victim and was a rape victim in another area. But when she learned about our program, she thought that would be, she wished her friend had had that assistance, so
right.
she wanted us to step up. So I think there's a connection if they've been a victim or they've had some interaction with that situation.
And let's go ahead and give out those crisis line numbers since we have them up here right now. The domestic violence crisis mm-hmm. line is 896-2012, mm-hmm. and the sexual assault crisis line is 494-9262.
Right. And both of those lines transfer over. We have staff awake at the desk on call till 10 o'clock at night, and we transfer those phones over to a professional answering service that can, mm-hmm. so either number, if somebody has a sexual assault issue and just doesn't remember that number, if they'll just call either of those numbers, we'll get them sorted out and get somebody on the phone with them.
The important thing isn't which number to call, it's call.
It's call. Ask for help. And for most of our services, other than going to court, if somebody does want to go through a restraining order and go before the judge, all of the correct, accurate information has to be given. But as far as our other services, coming in for information, for counseling, even shelter, can be done anonymously. We're still a small community in a lot of ways, and somebody who works here, goes to school, works professionally, may not want to come in and say, hey, I'm Joe Smith from such and such a, you know, an agency, and I need your help. He can make up an alias, because mm-hmm. we don't really care.
Let me ask you sort of in that same vein, you know, mm-hmm. of wanting to remain anonymous. There's often, with victims of these kind of crimes, a certain amount of shame associated with it. Not that they should feel that way, but that there is associated with it. I was looking at some domestic violence statistics from about 3 years ago for the state of Tennessee. Listed off how many people that the various organizations had provided shelter to and aid to. And with women and children, they were in the thousands.
Right.
With men, literally double digits.
Right.
Do you think that is because there are actually less men that are victims, or do you think it's that men have more of a problem coming forward and wanting to admit to it, and that maybe there's this big pool of victims out there that we're not recognizing and that are really keeping to themselves about it?
I think both of those are true. The one thing we've sort of, like, over the years, we keep the data, the hardcore physical, you know, some of the damaging violence within domestic violence and rape cases, males are primarily the perpetrators. But when you add in all of the other ways to be violent, all of the harassing and stalking and threatening and, you know, you'll never see your children and you're going to be broke because of what I'm going to do. I think when we add those victims to the pool, and they certainly belong. I mean, that's part of the domestic violence victim group. I think you start picking up the male victims, same-sex, elderly, disabled. I think you get the rest of us in that other pool. And part of that is a reporting problem. It's one, they're not sure that it is domestic violence. It's like, you know, I have a girlfriend, and it's not like she beat me up or anything like that. She didn't, you know, break my arm or put me in the hospital, but she's keyed my car. She's broken into my bank account. She, you know, trashes me on Facebook, you know, just on and on and on. But that's not domestic violence, so I don't know why I called. And it's like, come on in and talk, because it certainly, you know, does count. And so I think a lot of people don't define domestic violence, and then there's the shame of coming forward and reporting it.
I think people hear domestic violence, they think, you know, the word violence is very much in there. They think, well, if it's not a physical altercation of some kind.
Yeah, I can't show you.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So all that stuff counts, stalking, you know, threatening, even non-physical, emotional, verbal, that stuff is all very much under that heading.
Right. Tennessee law just changed in July, and they added posting things online, pictures and information online, with the intent of hurting, scaring, threatening people, is now a crime in the Tennessee code. You know, it's a specific line item in the code.
Isn't that scary that social media has now become something that we have to change the law to for things like that?
Well, and the new phones. We were just talking, you know, also earlier about I need to get a new phone. Mm-hmm. But and GPS on your phone sounds like a great thing. You know, if you had an accident, you know, police could find you and save you. But you can also track somebody anywhere in the world with those GPS on your phone. And, you know, if you get little boyfriends and girlfriends and, you know, you said you were at work tonight, but your phone, you know, showed that you were so-and-so and what's going on. And it's just a whole new level of stalking that our generation didn't have to think about.
That's so true. Well, and something else that people might not necessarily associate as being included in domestic violence is elder abuse.
Yep.
That has really taken off in recent years.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Is there any reason for that?
We're getting older. we do have more senior citizens. But I think that's one that we also didn't identify with. We wanted to really work with the caregiver, because if you've ever caregiven anybody who's sick or injured or elderly, even taking care of small children on the other, child abuse on the other side of that, is we really feel for the caregiver. You know, they're working 9 to 5. They've got their own family. Now they're taking care of mom or dad, and it's a never-ending battle.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you take care of them, they still get worse. They get older and sicker and more frail, so it doesn't look like you're being successful. And so our sympathies were, yes, you've done this. You were inappropriate with your mom or dad, but we feel for you. You know, we understand you're trying to be the best you can be at this job that's so difficult. And I think now we're saying, uh-uh.
No.
There's plenty of people, you know, the guy who beats up his wife or abuses his kids, he's probably under some stress somewhere in his life, too. We don't cut that person any slack. So now the person who abuses the elderly person is an abuser, even if they are a stressed-out caregiver. And I think that attitude is bringing people forward.
And it's not always just people in, you know, nursing homes or assisted living facilities. That used to be the case. You would hear about elder abuse, and you would think, well, it's this place that they're living at is mistreating them. That's really not the case. It can be spouses, partners, family. It's getting closer and closer to those people.
Sure. There's only about 5 to 8% of the senior population is in an institutional care setting. The rest of us, I'm 63 now, the rest of us are here in the community. We still have husbands and boyfriends and date and things like that, and it's just, it's a little bit more fragile, a community. So the damage that might be done, like bruising and broken bones and things like that, it's these people are a little bit more frail.
Let's talk a little bit about some warning signs, things people might be able to look for to spot if someone in their life might be a victim. And I guess we'll start, since we were just talking about elder abuse, with something they could look for in elders.
With the seniors, the Postal, U.S. Postal Service has been wonderful over the years in training their carriers to look for things that look wrong.
The Postal Service, really?
That if they're delivering mail and this senior citizen's yard has always been immaculate, they've come to the door and, you know, greeted them, they look nice. The puppy, the little poodle is beautiful, you know, groomed, bowing its hair. But this time the grass is overgrown. The dog is outside and is obviously not cared for. Something's going on. Mm-hmm. Or maybe there's a young couple now living there, a couple of, you know, cars in the yard that have never been there. Just things that just don't look like this person would have had it that way. Maybe somebody's moved in on them and is causing some problems. Or the senior can no longer take care of them themselves.
Right.
And need help.
And how about for the rest of the population? How about children? Because children will often want to keep things to themselves as well. They won't want to rock the boat with adults. They very much just want to please people, so they may keep things to themselves.
They know to keep quiet. Kids that are not age appropriate, I think, is one of the telltale signs, and that can be either direction. Children who suffer from sexual abuse can act much older than what they should know for their age, have a vocabulary and behavior that doesn't fit with a 3 or 4 year old's what they should be knowing at that age. And a little bit bigger kids, even like 7, 8, 9 year olds that are acting baby-like and going in the other direction. May be an indication of abuse or something going on, something happening to them. And that's a pretty easy one for folks that know these kids to spot. If your grandkids all of a sudden are, you know, said going one way or the other, and I mean, all kids like to play baby. There's a new baby in the family. We all talk baby talk. You know?
Right.
But when it looks like a pattern and something's wrong, that's a pretty good indicator.
Are there indicators of if someone might be an abuser?
Harder to tell. Most abusers are pretty pretty careful with their behavior. You know, child abusers are the people that we would like to think least likely, you know, teachers, coaches, the ministry, you know, people that every day do horrible things and are the people that we overlook.
But that's almost so common sense, it's frightening
Who's around kids?
Most kids.
The best people and some of the worst people.
Yeah.
And then I think for the one thing that we have seen pretty consistently in our agency is the quick involvement. You know, we met today, we have dinner tonight, you know, we date this week, and let's talk about engagement and marriage and kids. And when somebody wants to, you know, totally engage your life that quickly and that solidly.
That's a red
that's
flag.
Sort of what's a red flag? Let me back off and, you know, see how it looks 6 months from now. And then also blaming everyone for their problems. You know, I got fired, but it's his fault, her fault, you know, my wife's fault, my boss's fault, that kind of thing.
Dismissal of accountability.
I think that's one that you can spot, you know, pretty easily.
All right. Ms. Johnson, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
If anyone is interested in getting more information, you certainly should to volunteer, just to find out what resources are available here. DVPshelter.org, that is DVPshelter.org. You can make donations on the website.
Can.
Fantastic. And there is a newsletter. You guys have entered the social media age as well, Facebook and MySpace.
Oh, yeah, kicking and screaming. The younger staff have got us all participating now, so this is great.
How's that going? Do you have people who are reaching out to you guys through social media?
We do. We've got a good, they've got Facebook, and they've got a website, Facebook page for the children's program, and things like that. And we talked about Hands-On Nashville.
Yes.
We network with other agencies online and things like that.
And speaking of cell phones, because we just talked about them earlier, you can donate your old cell phone.
Right. It's a good little fundraiser. Originally, we were getting cell phones to give to victims because people come to without phones. Now, most of the people we serve have phones that are as nice as, you know, certainly nice as mine. So we don't have that need as much. But there's a real market in buying used cell phones, and it makes a nice little fundraiser for us.
That's good information to have. Thank you so much for being with us today, dvpshelter.org.
Thank you.
Have a fantastic weekend.
You too.